winner all of my food.
Welcome to the Inner Ho Uprising,
the podcast about sex, love, and dating from the perspective of me, Sam, one black polyamorous feminist ho living in New York City,
and me, Rodeca, flat black pen. This is the first time I've ever messed up in like a while. Me, Rodeca.
You didn't even know your name.
Yeah, sometimes I'm Rebecca, sometimes I'm Rod, sometimes I'm Rodeca.
I like Rod the best because it's like you're going to give me some long pipe later.
But I am always a fat black pansexual whose life is a series of coincidences that somehow landed her here.
Aw, look at you. As I mentioned earlier, my name is Sam. My name is Sam. I'm the principal host of this here show. That means that week in and week out, I'm here with one of three rotating co-hosts, and this week is Rodeca Week.
What's up?
What's up?
Did you guys miss me? I didn't. I know you didn't.
But when were you gone?
I was gone for like two episodes, and I wasn't there for the group episode.
Oh, true.
So people, right. You know, care. They care. Someone.
We'll see.
That one person who always hits me up on Instagram.
Who is
that? You know
that?
Who you are.
Who is it?
It's no one.
Okay, because I was like, if you don't have a name, this doesn't actually exist. Welcome to season four of the Inner Ho Uprising, which will be exactly like season three of the Inner Ho Uprising. JK, mad different shit. For example, the last episode of our Black History Month themed episodes of February.
Yeah. This is it right here.
This is the last
We're
thing.
Ending it.
So this should be good. Yeah, and I never want to do it ever again.
It was intense. I mean, we really wanted to. It's funny. We really wanted to make sure we brought as much information, but I've learned so much outside of a school setting that I didn't intend to.
Yeah.
But it's great. I mean, it was fun.
I think it was good programming, but just like for me personally, I miss talking about ho shit. And yeah. I'm not going to miss doing this much research.
It's true.
Because we already do mad research and it's just like, oh God, now it actually matters.
Yes, yeah. It really matters because I was always afraid that like, I'm like, I could like try and get the gist of something, but there will be like 5, 10, 15 people who are like, you
You're
fucked
wrong.
Up.
Yeah, exactly. And they
mad
will times.
Exactly. It's not even you. And you guys are so like blunt that it's not even like a oh, well, you might have done a comment. It's like, nah, I'm sending you this email because
Shirley Chisholm is pro-black, you dumb bitch.
Did someone say
it's
that?
It's a shot of Shakur, not a shot of Shaker.
Which was autocorrect. That was not my
fault.
That
did happen.
Yeah, but I'm sorry. But hopefully you enjoyed last episode, which we talked about Asada Shakur at length. No, that didn't happen. Janicia just politely said, here, watch this documentary about Shirley Chisholm.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, she didn't call you a dumb bitch. Out loud.
That's just you every day of the week. You're calling me a fucking dumb bitch.
Ring, ring, ring. Hello, Sam. Why the fuck are you calling me again? I just want to let you know that you're a dumb bitch.
And then I'm just like, thank you, after I hang up, because it proves to me that you're an asshole and I don't have to feel bad for hating you. Just, that's all I need.
If you're a new listener to this show, we have some segments here for you. They are as follows.
Bae of the Week.
We talk about people who we find attractive.
Ho of the Week.
We shout you guys out, the homies, the listeners.
Self-care tip of the week.
Where we give you some advice on how to take care of yourselves.
Pay a ho.
Where we beg for money that we desperately need.
Fuck that.
Which is our current events segment, which we're skipping all of February. So this is the last time we won't be talking about current events.
Because we're talking about history up in here.
Exactly. Past events.
Then we have
previous events.
Fuck it.
Which is our topic of the day. And today we're talking about queer story or queer black history with a very cool guest who is a queer history connoisseur.
Yes.
Is that the word connoisseur?
Connoisseur is a word.
Is that the word?
He dabbles in queer history.
That sounds weird. That sounds like a porn. Yeah, next segment.
Queer history, the dabbler. I'm sorry. Anyway, fuck me.
The segment where we talk about our sexual, romantic, and dating lives, which are also skipping for all of February, but can't wait to tell you what's been going on.
We're stacking up our stories so we actually have something substantial, because normally we're just like, I don't have anything going on. I'm tired.
This sweet, sweet pussy. You're going to hear all about it.
I'm excited because I haven't heard about it in quite some time.
Sweet, sweet pussy.
My pussy's from the South.
And fuck you.
This is where we talk about your sweet, sweet pussy. And your sexual, romantic, and dating lives.
And if you would like to follow along in the conversation had in this podcast on social media, you can do so by using the hashtag InnerHoUprising so we can see it, and the hashtag PodEnd so other people can see it.
Mm-hmm. And if you want to pay us to speak at your school or conference about sex positivity, black feminism, or other kinds of topics that we discuss on this here show, we would love to do so. To book us, send us a line to ihupodcast@gmail.com and we'll talk from there. What's our first segment?
Bay of the Week.
Yes, and this month we are doing a special Black History Month themed Bay of the Week. I'll start with mine.
Start with yours.
Yeah, because she's pretty cool, but she may not have existed.
Oh.
Yeah. She may be a, what's the word, amalgamation? Is that when you put a whole bunch of things together? Amalgamation?
Of just like, first of all, you know I don't know if that's what it is. I was so impressed when you said it. I was like, that sounds like the right thing to say, but I don't know. I think
that is the word, but I'm not sure either. But she may be a combination of several legendary women together, or she might not have existed. But either way, she's a legend. This is Nanny of the Maroons. She's a Jamaican national hero. I think she's on like the $5 Jamaican bill or something like that. And one of the national heroes. So she was one of the Maroons, or a legendary member who may not have existed, of the Maroons. The Maroons were different. I mean, they existed in different places. So basically a Maroon community is a community of runaway slaves who fosters their own community outside of slavery.
Yeah.
And sometimes like they would, no. Okay, fine. Sometimes they would work with like slave owners,
okay,
and stuff like that. But they were just
like, no, never mind. Because you're like, do I go there? I'm gonna go there.
I don't know why that was the first piece of information, but I just thought that was interesting because that, like, they were literally a community in these countries that they were in, and they were not to be fucked with. To the point where they would act like slave owners would ask them for help and shit like
that.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah, and they just, like, use parts of the land. Like, in Jamaica, there's this place called Cockpit Country, and it's really hard to get to because it's really mountainous. So they would, like, master the land and use parts of the land, and nobody would fucking get in. So they were pretty cool. But Nanny is cool, one, because she's a woman of this cool fucking, like, society of people who were not fucked with. But there's a story about her, or a myth about her, that she was famous for catching bullets. So she would catch bullets in one of two ways. She would either, they said that she would either catch bullets with her hands, which was a highly developed art form in some parts of Africa. And the other version of the story is that she would catch bullets with her ass and fart them out, which is why I like her, because...
Is that like a real legend? Like, people know her for that?
Catching bullets with her butt, yeah. Although I didn't know about the fart them out part. I don't know. My dad told me this and he didn't tell me the fart them out part.
And she's on the five. Well, she's on some type of money. That's amazing.
Yeah. Nanny of the fucking Maroons, bro.
Look at that.
Yeah.
And that's her legend. So they don't know she exists because it's all like people are just talking about her.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, my hoe of the week, because, you know, this month, I just want to let everybody know, I don't like history.
You don't like history?
I don't.
What does that really mean?
Like, I don't know, and this is going to sound weird, and it's probably going to sound like a high tangent, because I realize that I just have high tangents when I'm sober now. But it's just like, yo, like, all we do in school is just learn about all the things that we've done as humans. And sometimes it's not interesting. Sometimes I'm just like, I don't give a fuck. Like, what am I going to do today? What am I going to eat for lunch?
Aren't those things important?
They are important. But we can't.
You just don't care.
Yeah, I mean, I don't care.
That's okay.
But the reason why I say that is because this podcast and this month made me care.
Yay.
That's why I'm saying it. And that's legit. I don't have to say that. You guys know I'm an asshole. I'll just be like, nah, this was a waste.
This was the boringest fucking month ever.
But this was fucking great. Like, I was sitting here looking through people and I'm like, who do I pick? Like, I really was at work listening to... So I ended up choosing a blues singer. So I was listening to like her records and all that type of stuff at work, and I was having a good time.
That's cool.
And it's just interesting to know things and that I can rub into other people's faces at one point
so
in time.
So that's why you care about history? For the dickheadedness of it.
There's a positive aspect to it because, you know, yeah, I'm more enlightened and all that, but also like I can rub people's face and shit and be like, oh, you didn't know magnanimism means that it's a conglomerate of ideas or something. That was my
amalgamation. But isn't the adage true, like, you don't know where you are going if you don't know where you came from?
Yeah, it's definitely
there any truth to that? For you?
Okay, seriously, it makes my conversations and my debates more interesting.
It's just going back to that.
Do I not have anything that
is like, you actually care about history?
It's crazy because I just said literally another way that this is to fight people.
This purposely helps me win arguments.
This is who I am as a person.
That's fine though. That's okay.
But it also makes me feel better.
Who the fuck is your person?
Well, her name is Bessie Jackson or Lucille Bogan. I believe
that's cool.
Yeah,
man.
Her name is Lucille Bogan, but she goes by the pseudonym Bessie Jackson, or the other way around. Don't like, crucify me if I'm wrong.
Her family's going to write in.
Yeah, I know.
I'm suing that ass.
She's a famous blues singer of the 20s and the 30s, and she was known for singing, like, sexy lyrics to the crowd and stuff like that, but she would always, like, kind of lean a little bit more towards the women, and everyone's like,
yay.
Yeah, and everyone's like, what's going on with that? But that's a time when
it was
bold as shit, you know what I mean?
That's cool.
But she was known for the lyrics, but one of her songs in particular was BD Woman's Blues. So BD back then, or I don't know if it still does now, stands for Bull Dykes, which was a colloquial term for in that area that meant lesbians. And I don't know if that's like offensive. I'm almost certain it is.
I mean, it is, but like you're gay, so
yeah,
whatever.
So
that's
I'm
fine.
Just like, yeah.
Yeah.
felt uncomfortable, and I was like, okay. But she sang a song, like, in a positive light. Like she's coming from their perspective.
Yeah, like the N-word.
Exactly.
Reclamation.
Exactly.
I have a quick tangent. I think that, like, offensive terms are so fucking funny, because they just don't make any sense. Like, why is it a bull?
Bull types.
Like, what the fuck?
You don't know where these things... But they just talked weird. Like in the 20s, like everything was so old timey and so
exaggerated. The transatlantic accent.
Yes, that's what it is.
The fake accent.
So you like a bulldog, Sonny. Doesn't mean she likes women. That's what it is. It doesn't make any sense. It's like they threw extra words in for the flair.
Yeah.
So that's probably where bulldog came from. But it just means lesbian, y'all. That's what it means. And like the first line of the song is coming a time when we ain't gonna need no man. And I'm just like, look at us.
That's lit.
Always.
That's pretty lit. And we've like, always been this way.
Yeah. And later on, they can lay their jive just like a natural man. And I'm like,
wow.
Okay.
Talking about the strap on.
Yeah.
The strap on.
And that's something that they just weren't doing at that time.
That's
so lit. I think she's kind of dope.
I appreciate
and I would
it.
Not have known she existed
if it was not for trying to win arguments.
Exactly.
Shout out to Lucille Bogan. What's our next segment?
Ho of the week. We have a couple of hoes to shout out here.
Yes, you want to read them?
Yeah, Hoel, always.
Shout out to Hoel.
Israel T. Yeah. Just want to make sure I'm pronouncing that right. I hope so. Rebecca, hi. My name is also Rebecca. I'm sure you get that a lot, and I'm sorry to be one of those people. But
the funny thing here is that their nickname is actually Rodeca. That's the weird part. I'm lying.
I looked at you and I was like, this
was
is
like
a
so
thing.
Blatantly a lie.
Yeah.
See, like, how do people believe
wait
me?
A minute.
Whoa, that's crazy.
And Spike Lowery.
And it's pronounced Lowry.
Lowry.
Yeah.
Lowry.
He's cool. He some of his songs were on the show before.
Oh, cool. Well, you guys are our hoes of the week, and we love you.
Yeah. Thank you for paying a bitch. Our next segment is self-care tip of the week. This week, I would like to remind everyone to moisturize in ways outside of lotion and water. So it's been a very cold and dry winter for me personally. Not only is the air dry outside when it's cold, but also, I don't know, I use like my space heater too much. But that also dries out the room and it's left my nostrils really dry to the point where like... I'm not having nosebleeds, but when I blow my nose, it's bloody.
Mm.
And it shouldn't be. Yeah, that's kind of fucked up. Or like, you know, those dry, those dried bloody boogers that be happening.
And you're just like, that's
inside
probably
of my nose.
Not okay.
Yeah. And I can also just feel my nose being hella dry, which is why I use Vicks so much. But I needed to go past the Vicks.
Did you see that lady who was addicted to eating Vicks?
No.
There's a person out there like that. Just wanted to let you know.
Why is she eating it though?
She said it. Okay. It always normally comes down to some type of like psychological or childhood thing.
Oh, okay.
So like she just remembered the comfort of that when she was a kid. So she rubs it all over her. And I guess some of it got in her mouth once or something. And she just like loved it. And she's been smelling it to like get back to feeling like she's at home, but also eating it. And like, that's probably
that's not
okay.
Bueno. Yeah, that's not bueno.
It's very like menthol.
Yeah, it's just not to be. It's menthol and it's also like petroleum. So
it's like
just
that's
eating.
Intense.
Yeah, that's not good. Don't do that. But rub
I'm just
a little
filled with random ass facts like that, and I apologize for
rub
who
a
I am.
Little Vicks on the outside of your nose if you're feeling dry, but don't put it in your nose because you're not supposed to do that because then you're just inhaling the petroleum jelly and the menthol. But Yeah, so also my scalp. I'm just a dry ass person in general.
Same.
I have eczema. But yeah, so this winter has really been doing a number on my scalp. So for your scalp, if you're a dry ass bitch, I mean, obviously you have to find the concoction that works for you. But a mixture of tea tree oil, jojoba oil, and olive oil has been working wonders on my scalp. Specifically with the tea tree oil, because, you know, it just like makes your scalp feel not crusty anymore. And then the other two oils will like actually moisturize it. And then for your nose, get a fucking humidifier.
Which I found out is, like, what I've been needing this whole time.
Yeah.
Because I have this cheap one, and it doesn't
work. How big is your cheap one?
My cheap one, and obviously I'm going to, like, show Sam, but I'm holding my hands up in, like, a square.
Okay, that's exactly what I thought you were talking about. And like, it's a small ball.
It's cute, and it changes color or whatever.
Oh, I think I have that one, too, but that doesn't work.
It doesn't do anything. Yeah. It's like,
I have, like, three of those.
It's, like, a little whisper of a vape. Exactly. Thing. It's nothing.
Yeah, maybe if you were in, like, a closet, it would help, but not for, like, an actual room.
I was in
like
a closet at one point, but I'm out now.
Those just don't work at all.
she didn't get it, guys.
I have a large one that's like probably, I don't know, 12 inches in circumference.
Okay.
That makes sense. It's by Vicks, the actual company.
Wow.
Yeah, I buy Vicks products. So you like boil
money.
You boil the water and you put it in there, but also there's like a top electrical part, which sounds fucked up, but like just don't spill these things on each other, you know? Like just don't mix it. But I think that also heats up the water. But there's like a little container in front of the mist part that you can put like a Vicks pad in or Vicks oil in, and then it'll do that whole
menthol
thing.
Does it work with like
well.
Essential oils?
Probably, yeah. Okay. You can put anything in there. So,
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
And it'll make your nose less dry, which is important these days.
Yeah.
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 Invest in that.
Winter.
Yeah, exactly. Which is almost over, maybe. I don't know.
I have a bad habit in the winter of just like
becoming dry.
Always. But not only lotioning where others can see.
Damn, nigga.
And like,
what's up with that?
Because I'm lazy as fuck, and like it takes me only 20 minutes to get ready in the morning, and that takes like another 5 minutes.
Wow.
I'm always clean, but like I only lotion where people see.
I'm the type of person. Remember we were talking about off mic. Were we talking about this?
Probably not.
Oh yeah,
everyone thinks I'm someone else.
Taking out? No, yes, we were taking off makeup.
Oh yeah, yeah,
yeah. Like I can't sleep if my makeup is on. I can't sleep if my head is not tied up, and I also can't like go out in the day if I'm not moisturized.
Yeah,
it just feels weird.
I mean, you have standards, and I appreciate that about you.
I don't know if it's standards so much as me just locking these things in my head.
Yeah, again, standards. But for me, it's like, I pretty much just do whatever's the easiest.
I don't floss. I don't lotion.
Yeah, it's just like I'm probably
just gonna get
gross,
a shower out of me.
But for some reason, I keep on living, and people still fuck with me sometimes. You shouldn't.
I guess they don't have standards.
Yeah,
either.
You know. I mean, you're my friend, Sam. So let's not.
I don't gotta touch on your ashy ass body.
That's
though.
True.
So
except
I don't
for that
care.
One time. Oh wait, sorry. Wasn't supposed to say that on air.
Woo. Anyway, the next segment is pay a hoe. If you would like to help sustain a fucking hoe monetarily, you can do so by going to innerhoeuprising.com, clicking the tab pay a hoe. You can also go directly to paypal.me/innerhoe. You can stay on innerhoeuprising.com and click the merchandise tab to buy a cool hoodie or a t-shirt. You can use sponsor codes used in not this but previous and future episodes. And also, if you would like to support a hoe on a monthly basis, you can do so by subscribing to us on Patreon and receive perks while you're doing it. This is an easy way to throw some dollars a monthly towards the show, because studios, transportation, and events are not cheap. And as you can see, every episode is not sponsored. If you're able and you'd be so kind, you can visit our Patreon, which is patreon.com/innerhoeuprising. You can find that in the description for this episode. And you can donate $2, which will give you access to private IHU gatherings, like Rob's going away party that we had last weekend, and that was really cool. And other things will be happening like that in the future, so make sure you're on Patreon so you know what's up. You'll also receive our undying love and affection, which is
always,
that's a really good thing to have, honestly. If I didn't have my own undying love and affection, I would not be able to do this show.
It's so true.
For the price of $5 a month, you can get all that, as well as access to some exclusive behind the scenes video content.
What?
Like from our photo shoot that we did like 2 days ago. You can get to see our titties falling out of our shirts.
That does happen.
And that's the sound.
Or maybe
that
it doesn't.
Make.
You'll never find out.
Unless you're on Patreon.
That's it.
Exactly. Yeah, so that's perfect for people who want to see things like that. You can also donate less or more, $1 a month, or $1 zillion a month, or anywhere in between. It's all appreciated. This is just a more consistent way to pay a hoe, pretty much spending what you would for one Four Loko once a month. but to help your favorite host.
I never got to have Four Loko when it was fucking crazy.
Really?
And it bothers me.
Why not?
Because I was so innocent at one point. And I say this all the time.
Wait,
I was.
What?
I was.
Wait, when did Four Loko come out?
Four Loko was probably like... Wait, are you trying to calculate my innocence right now?
Yeah,
I
am.
I felt like it.
Because we were all drinking like, Four Lokos.
Nah, man. I wasn't drinking that much like when we were in high school and stuff. The one and only That's time crazy. I drank was like when we were all in the basement. And I felt like, oh my God, this is crazy. But I never
we
did
weren't drink. Drinking Four Lokos then?
No, we weren't. Oh, okay. I think it was a little after that. And I wasn't doing anything.
Oh, you didn't drink Four Lokos in college?
Never.
Damn, you really did miss out. That's good because that shit was actually killing people.
Yeah, like for real.
Those were the most disgusting and fucked up vomits of my entire life.
But I heard that they were like insane though. Like you were like just blitzed like out in the streets.
You were, but like you didn't need to be. So like it's okay that you didn't go through this, to be honest.
All right. Yeah. I mean, that's me and I'm Thought Juice, to be honest.
No, because Four Loko had caffeine in it, so it was really stupid.
It was just like a speedball.
It was
of
dumb.
Just,
yeah, exactly. Okay. Why was that on the market? Wow. But yeah. Also, like, why do bodegas sell K2?
True.
Yeah.
True.
So everything's fucked up.
Fuck it. The topic of the day, and today we're speaking with Deshaun of Queer Black Millennial, which is a really cool website that we're going to talk about a little bit later. But we're speaking with him about Black queer history because he is a Black queer history enthusiast and has been doing some really cool work on social media around those conversations.
When and why did you start engaging in conversation about queer Black history on social media?
That's a great question. Just to like repeat what y'all just said, I'm Deshaun. I am a queer non-binary person. And so I started engaging, I guess, like queer history on social media a while ago, like several years back. But this year for Black History Month, I wanted to do something different than what we usually see because a lot of times people come up with like really unique hashtags talking about different points in Black history, but I've not seen like any real history around Black queer folks specifically. And so since I work with Queer Black Millennial, or QBM is what we call it, I just thought like, why not call it Black Queerstory Month and like talk about like queer stories, Black queer stories in history, Black queer stories like in today's time that would, I guess, like shed more light on stories that we don't often hear. That's kind of what I decided to do with February. And then like, as I posted, like I didn't post throughout the entire month, just more so at the beginning. And then from there, like it just kind of took its own thing. And a lot of folks, were posting like on Instagram and Twitter using that hashtag.
That's awesome. Thank you for doing, that important work. And if you could talk a little bit about what QBM is.
QBM is one of my favorite projects to date. One of my really good friends from Morehouse. Well, he doesn't go to Morehouse anymore. I'm a student at Morehouse, and he was once a student at Morehouse. He tweeted out asking, like, hey, like, I'm looking for some content creators, Black queer content creators who are wanting to work on a project with me. And so I was like, well, duh, I write. I've been writing now for a little while. Why not? So I texted him and he was like, I don't know why I didn't text you first anyway. And we started like fleshing out ideas about what exactly he wanted because it was his vision. His name is Jalen Thomas. And from there, it just kind of like exploded into this website, this brand where we would have Black queer content creators. Whether it's videography or writing or art or whatever like the work is, photography, we created a space for us to create our own content that wouldn't be disrupted or be like diluted, but would be give us free range to like just be the artists that we are, and that was, I think our release date was October 23rd or 28th of last year.
Okay.
And we've been going ever since.
Awesome.
So to touch on more of the topics that you guys specifically started doing after you launched Black Queerstory Month. I actually saw that you spoke about two people in specific, Bayard Rustin and Audre Lorde. So I wanted to talk about first Audre Lorde. Can you, because I saw that you actually had a thread where you were talking about their book and all that type of stuff. Can you tell us a bit about her legacy, who she is, and why she's important to queer history?
Audre Lorde is not really a popular name that you hear outside of like academic spaces. But she was a Black lesbian poet and writer, and I think she's absolutely brilliant. She was one of the first womanist and one of the first like Black writers who didn't hide their sexuality with their work and instead made it a point to like make it clear that like their work was inspired by both their Blackness and her lesbianism. And so like, or I guess rather her lesbianness. and so like she, her work is really important because through it, like you find a lot of different things that we talk about today in feminism or like Black queer theory or in womanism was like fleshed out or inspired by her work. She, like, I remember a lot of times she described herself as the Black lesbian mother warrior poet. And that means a lot to me and to like to other Black queer theorists and writers, just because of like the fact that, again, we don't often see a lot of ourselves in history, in Black history specifically. And so to see this woman who was very, very, very proud of her Blackness and of her sexuality and owned both of them at the same time was really important for me. And actually earlier today, I tweeted out a quote of hers where she says that her sexuality is part and parcel of who she is. And her poetry comes from the intersection of both of those worlds. And so I just think that like Audre Lorde is really important for us to understand that like Black queer folks can be really influential in academic spaces and outside of, and we, the work that we do matters to the culture and to like Black learning and Black intellectual thought.
You also tweeted about her book and you said in the book, Lorde reveals that Zami, I want to make sure I'm pronouncing it right, is a name for women who are both lovers and friends. And Kariakou? I'm terrible at speaking.
I am too.
There you go. but that's the name of the island her mother migrated from. I just wanted to know, can you share with us why you felt that specifically, like breaking down the name was important and what that means to you?
Can we start? Sorry to cut you off. Can we start at the beginning and just explain what Zami, a new spelling of my name, is? What the work was about and what kinds of things that she was talking about for listeners who might not know.
The name of the book is Zami, a new spelling of my name. And in that book, it is what she called a, I'm going to mess up this name, but she called it a bio mythography. That was like the first project that coined that word. And it was just like a mixture of a biography and myth, which she says was largely like male before then.
Like myths.
And so
mythology. Gotcha. Cool.
Mythology. And so the book is just her like sharing her own story through her poetry and through prose and just talking about like talking about that in like with her real stories, but also integrating it with like fiction and stuff like that. And so the name I felt was important to break down because a lot of folks don't really look into history of titles just beyond what they read in the book. And I thought that it was just another very clear example of how she felt it was important to mix her her sexuality with her Blackness and with her culture. Like this was this island that her mom is from, that she migrated from, and she and the word itself means like I don't remember exactly, but like talking about women as lovers and friends. And so like her using
Zami
that
means that
yes So her using Zami to talk about those two things together, just to me felt like a very clear example of like, oh, hey, I am both Black and I am also a woman who has women lovers and friends.
Mm-hmm.
And here's my story.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was pretty cool.
And I'm from this Black Caribbean island.
Yeah,
that is pretty
exactly.
cool.
Exactly.
Do you feel like, you mentioned briefly that you feel like most of the time people don't talk about, I think I saw one of your tweets that they kind of quote her, but they try and separate her from her queerness. Do you feel like that happens a lot?
I do. I think that happens way too often.
Specifically with Audre Lorde.
I was going to say, well, it was kind of a segue into somebody who apparently has been erased from the civil rights movement and all that type of stuff to tie it into Bayard.
Before we go into Bayard, I have one more question about Audre Lorde.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. So Audre Lorde was a noted womanist, and I was just wondering if you could talk a little bit about like this distinction between womanism and feminism and why Lorde also called herself a womanist, if you know.
Yes, I can do my very best, though I'm sure y'all can do it better than me. But womanism is a word coined by Alice Walker, who I mm-hmm. love. And she, in her, in one of her books, which the name escapes me right now, she says that womanism is to feminism what lavender is to purple. Mm-hmm. And I remember that because purple is my favorite color.
Purple is also my favorite color. I just wanted to, you know, really? Us to bond.
That just means that you're the best person. So I can
okay. I've heard. That's you it. Are too. All right, guys.
But womanism, like, just to me and my understanding of it, is that it is a sector of feminism.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it doesn't separate itself from feminism. It doesn't claim to be a space that is in direct opposition to feminism, but it mm-hmm. recognizes that Black women have oftentimes been like left out of the conversation when it comes to women's rights and feminist struggles.
Mm-hmm.
And Alice Walker recognized that, and so she decided to coin a word, coin a term that would be more directly like target Black women's struggles.
Mm-hmm.
And so that, to me, is what womanism is, and that is what Audre Lorde ID'd as.
Thank great. You. That was great.
Did I do a good job?
No, you did. You did. I think that's exactly what I was looking for. So in terms of Bayard Rustin, I did see that you guys mentioned him. Mm-hmm. So just to start, do you feel like...
Well, who is Bayard
Rustin? Who is Bayard Rustin? Yes, that is where we should start.
Okay. So Bayard Rustin was the gay guy behind the OK work. If you ask any basic person, that's what they'll tell you.
Yeah.
So Bayard Rustin, he was this the socialist, and I think that's a really important fact to mention, mm-hmm. was that he was a socialist. He believed in equity. He believed in justice and liberation. And a lot of the work that we know from Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., who he worked with, comes from his mind and his work. And so in the 60s, during the really popular era of civil rights work and all of that beautiful stuff,
mm-hmm.
Bayard Rustin was a name that we don't often hear. And he worked alongside MLK and Rosa Parks and a lot of other folks who were doing that work and has just been erased from history almost. And it wasn't until recently, I can't think exactly of what, but there was something that happened like in more recent years that kind of brought his name to the forefront.
Mm-hmm.
And
was it the fact that he was portrayed in Selma? Because he was in there, although his sexuality wasn't.
Selma.
Yeah.
And his sexuality was not, of mm-hmm. course. But yeah, like once he was portrayed in Selma, a lot of folks just started talking about him again and like looking into him, which is actually when I learned of him.
Mm-hmm.
He helped organize the March on Washington.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, the march.
he was like the key organizer behind that march. Mm-hmm. And people don't know that. They think that MLK just brought out millions of people by himself. But yeah, Barrett Rustin had played a huge role in making that march a thing. So
yeah.
Yes.
And as a queer person yourself, this is just going to be me going into a tangent and then asking you a question or just asking your general thoughts. But like, you know, like Black Lives Matter is an organization that was conceived by and is currently run by three queer Black women. And a lot of the organizing, perhaps it was post-Ferguson. I think it was post-Ferguson. Specifically, there were two queer Black women who were doing a lot of the organizing. I don't remember what their names are. I think one's name was Alexis, and I forget the other person's name, but they were actually in a relationship. And I think they're married currently. When people found out about the fact that they were in a relationship, like they had posted like them getting married at the Justice of the Peace or something like that. And I saw a lot of tweets and like Facebook comments like, this is detracting from the movement and why are y'all doing this and this is not right. So can you talk a little bit about the fact that like queer people, queer Black people specifically, are always at the forefront of organizing and how people are actively erasing them as they're like literally doing the work currently.
Literally doing the work, like literally pulling all of the weight.
So
I have been organizing in Atlanta for the last three and a half years. And 99.9% of those of us who organize, at least in my spaces, are queer, queer and women. And queer women and non-binary folks. And so it's like, I've seen firsthand how we put in a lot of this labor, a lot of it for free, most of it for free, actually, and are oftentimes met with a lot of antagonistic behavior or a lot of like opposition that would otherwise not be a thing if the people who were quote unquote leading these spaces were cisgender heterosexual people. A lot of our work would have to be in relation to cishet men specifically in order for it to be more palatable, and they would get the recognition, or they would get the blame for what happened or what came of our work when we pulled most of the weight. And so like we see that with our own spaces in Atlanta, but we also see it like on a national scale, like y'all mentioned, with the three women who started the organization BLM, and how a lot of folks don't even know that the organization was started by them. They think that the movement is the organization, and they're not. They're two very different entities. But like, they have no idea. So I think that how we look back at past history, we witness it right now. We see it happening in front of us. And I realize that a lot of queer folks have gone the extra mile to make sure that our work and our names and the things that we do don't get erased from history, because we know that history, the history that we're told, comes from those who get the opportunity to tell it. And if it's not us telling it, then we won't be in the story. So that's actually one of the reasons why I started writing, is because I believe wholeheartedly that if we want to see ourselves in history, we have to be the ones to document it. And so I started telling our stories, or my story, that I think adds to the queer experience.
Definitely. That's awesome. Very happy that you're doing that. No, I am. Don't laugh. No, wasn't a joke. So we're going to segue like 500 years back. So before we recorded, one of the talking points that you said that you were very interested in speaking about was queerness as it existed in pre-colonial Africa. Can you talk about, in the first place, why this is even an important thing to discuss?
Yes, let's get into this. So first of all, I hate hoteps.
Explain what that is for like the 2% of listeners who don't know what you're talking about.
So hoteps would be the Black folk who quote unquote believe in liberation, but all of us were kings and queens before we got to America, and we all are from Egypt. And you know, women are secondary, queer folks don't exist.
Yeah.
these are Hotep. Mm-hmm. So first of all, I hate
also Hotep. Ashy and sometimes smell. Also, I want to forget that there too. 98% of the time.
Always ashy, most of the time ugly, like yeah, all of that. So the reason why I say I hate them is because most of them only know history from one country in Africa, and barely that. Mm-hmm. When Africa has over 50 countries, mm-hmm, right? And so a lot of the history that we're taught about, especially growing up, is about what happened with us post-slavery, mm-hmm, or post-colonialism. We never talk about what happened or what was pre-colonial. Mm-hmm. And so I just, like, y'all know the internet can be such a draining place.
Yes.
And I would see Hoteps and their kin talking a lot online about like how quote unquote homosexuality is a white man's thing and all this other. Can I curse? Is that okay?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
The show's called Internet Uprising.
The segment is fuck it. Yeah. You can definitely curse.
All this other bullshit online, right?
Yeah.
And they're talking about like things that didn't make any sense to me, and I wasn't even very well versed in like pre-colonial African history. Mm-hmm. But I knew that it made zero sense that people weren't like fucking who they want to fuck long before white people.
Yeah.
So I did some research, and the first thing I came across was a book called Boy Wives and Female Husbands. Mm-hmm. And it's written by, I believe his name is Will Roscoe. Mm-hmm. And the book just talks a lot about how in certain countries in Africa, it talks a lot about how marriages, or they weren't called marriages then, but like unions or relationships or whatever you want to call it now, oftentimes look like this male being, or what we would assign male to, being the wife, mm-hmm, taking on the more feminine roles or the more like roles that we would assign to women in marriages, and the person that we would assign female would take on more of these more masculine roles, and they would do a lot of the work and stuff like that, but they looked different. And by look, I mean like things that we would assign to them now as female versus male, mm-hmm, looked vastly different in that time. So I was very intrigued by that. I was like, okay, so like this just means that like sexuality and gender just looked a lot different, mm-hmm, in pre-colonial Africa. So I did some more research and found a book called Heterosexual Africa. It's a question.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And it just talks about like sexuality in Africa, and what that looked like prior to colonialism. And in that book, it really just says that sexuality wasn't a thing pre-colonial. Like people were, like, they existed as was, and who they had sex with wasn't named. It wasn't labeled. It was, I enjoy having sex with this person or these type of people, and I'm going to do that, and then I'm going to go out and do my business. Mm-hmm. Which sounds lovely to me. That sounds like the perfect life. So, like, that was, the book talks a lot about that. Mm-hmm. And then I read a book called History of Sexuality by Michel Foucault, and he is a white man, but, you know, whatever. this book is really helpful. And he just talks about how heterosexuality wasn't even a word or like a term or an understanding until way after colonialism. Mm-hmm. He proved, like, he talks about how the construct was literally made by white people, by Europeans specifically. And so as I did more like more research and digging and stuff through these books and other articles and a lot of that like just going on Google and be like, pre-colonial Africa sexuality, pre-colonial Africa gender. Mm-hmm. I just realized that hoteps are liars.
In summation.
Right. Like, summarizing everything, yeah. Hoteps are liars. Mm-hmm. And we've been out here, like, we may not have named these things, mm-hmm. Because that's what the West has done to us. They came up with a lot of labels, but ultimately, like, we've been existing, we've always been here. Our sexualities, our genders are not these Western concepts that just popped up out of nowhere. Of course, like, these binaries are, like, only understanding sexuality as straight or gay is a Western thing, mm-hmm. or only understanding gender as man or woman mm-hmm. is a Western thing. And I hate it so much. But, like, but us having different genders and sexualities is not a Western thing. Like, mm-hmm. Native American folks had two-spirited people. Trans folks have always existed. Like, it just, my mind was blown, I guess, you could say.
Yeah.
And just that, like, so much of the mainstream or dominant history that we're taught is so much of a lie.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I'm really, really, really passionate. I don't know if y'all can tell or not, but I'm really passionate about talking about, like, pre-colonial Africa and sexualities and genders, because, like, I just think about, what if, as a young child, I had known this information mm-hmm. Before I got to college.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how would my life look now if I would have been able to, like, be more comfortable with myself before I existed in this academic space
mm-hmm.
that is already, like, setting me up with some type of privilege.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so now I just feel like I have to talk about it all the time
so
that someone else can hear it and maybe learn something from it.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious. You mentioned that mm-hmm. it was a little while back, but you said how the roles with the men and the women in the house mm-hmm. or who would be a wife mm-hmm. or a husband in a house look different. Did you have any specific examples that, like, stuck out to you where you're like, that's just different from what we're used to?
You know how, like, we are oftentimes taught that women have to stay home and, like, do all of the dishes and wash all of the clothes and stuff like that mm-hmm. while men go out and they work, they bring in the money and that kind of thing. The roles were reversed in a lot of ways. Like, men were the ones who were, like, or not men, but these people who were called husbands then were, like, the ones staying home and taking care of stuff while the wives were out going to do the work, like getting the water and bringing stuff back to the house. And I thought that was really cool because it's like none of that affected their relationship or their masculinity or anything like that. They just did it because it was a way of life.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really cool.
This might be getting a little in the weeds here, but if possible, could you talk about, because there is, like, the reason why the West set up all of these binaries, and this mm-hmm. is what a man does and this is what a woman does, ultimately was mm-hmm. to feed into, like, the rise of agriculture. Do you know mm-hmm. enough about that to explain past my question, basically? Or, like, how did these ideals benefit, like, the systems that are in place right now?
Right. So, like, short answer, obviously, is patriarchy.
Mm-hmm.
And more specifically, like, cis-heteropatriarchy, where, like, this rise of agriculture, and y'all, I'm sure y'all know this, so y'all can, like, jump in anytime, but, like, where agriculture, like, had currency and folks who were in need of that currency, who wanted that currency, who wanted to take control of this industry, I guess you could call it,
mm-hmm.
Were men.
Mm-hmm.
And so in order to do that, there was, like, this need to make up binary classes.
Mm-hmm. And separate.
So, you know, rich, poor, man, woman, straight, gay, so forth and so on, so that those who existed, like, with more class or with more privilege, these cishet white men
mm-hmm.
Were the ones who controlled currency and they controlled how how systems of domination worked and how the world ran, essentially. Mm-hmm. And that gives you your beautiful, cis-hetero-patriarchal, capitalist, imperialist nation. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That is the West.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a good book to... I'm going to link all of the books that you described just now, but also another good book that talks about how, like, monogamy and, like, the man having one role and the woman having one role led to this rise in agriculture is Sex at Dawn.
Sex at Dawn?
Yeah.
Okay. That sounds good.
We should have an inner hut of Sex at Dawn.
We should have a book club.
Sex at Dawn.
Okay. Yeah, we should have a book club.
That would be dope.
Yeah.
Can I join?
Yes. I was about to ask you. Because I had heard of, what is it, Boy Wives and Sister Husbands, but I had not heard of those other two books, so that's cool.
I'm glad.
Got to check those out. Also, just to note, everybody who's listening, you can find Boy Wives and Female Husbands in free PDF. I'm not sure if the
word.
It seems like the authors have released it because it's been like a free PDF for like 4 years now. And it's still there. I just Googled it. Yeah. So. Definitely check that out.
Yes. And you can also find a PDF of History of Sexuality by Michelle Foucault.
Cool. Oh, okay, cool. Online. Cool.
Yes. Awesome. I don't know about Heterosexual Africa, though. I'll look it up. And
you
then,
just
like,
got to buy that on your Kindle.
Know.
You got to, come on, guys. You got to break off right. Or something. And finally, the last talking point that we're going to get to today that you were also excited to talk about is Black ballroom culture, Paris is Burning, and transgender folks and drag queens during the 1980s. So maybe... Maybe start off with what is the film Paris is Burning? What was its significance and why you are excited to talk about this?
Yes. So Paris is Burning was, or is rather, a documentary filmed in the 80s in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
And I think majority of the folks who... like a lot of queer folks who learn about our history, one of the first places we learn about is New York, because New York was this like huge hub of Black and Brown, Latinx, folks who just made space for ourselves in a world that just was not trying to accept us. So I love it for that very reason alone. Just it's like it gives a history that we don't usually have, but in this particular documentary, it not only like makes space for Black queer folks broadly, but it talks about a lot of like people who are more marginalized within our own community. So like people with HIV and people with AIDS and feminine Black gay men and trans women. And so I enjoyed it mostly because it allowed space for more marginalized groups to be able to share their stories. And in a way, it was one of the very first documentaries, mainstream at least, that gave light to who we were and gave light to a lot of things that were really taboo at the time and are kind of taboo now. So I really love it.
And are there any particular moments or people who are featured in the film that stick out to you? And what kinds of like impacts did those scenes or those people have?
Dorian Corey, she, you know, a lot of folks use the word shade now and stuff like that. You know, especially like cishet people, they love using our language. But she made one specific line out of the entire documentary, and I loved it. She was like, shade comes after reading. And I love it because it's like, if you don't know what reading means, if you don't know what it means to read someone, you don't know what shade really means. And so like only queer folks, especially Black queer folks, are going to understand the context of that. And I'm just really petty. So I love it because it's like, it was the first time you had seen our lingo, our language, in such a like widespread way that people, and people still don't know how to use the word correctly. I love that moment. Another person that I loved from there, Pepper LaBeija, of course. She's one of the drag queens in the movie. And I think I really appreciated her storyline. If nothing else, just how authentic she was and how, I guess how very open and vulnerable she was on camera. And mm-hmm. also was very funny. Like, I think that when people, a lot of times when we hear about our own history, it always is associated with sorrow and mourning and sadness. And so to see Pepper LaBeija on screen laughing, and I don't know if y'all seen this GIF or not, but like where she's sitting down in front of the camera, she's like, ha, suffer. Like, I just think that it is so funny because it's, like, it just gives, it comforts me knowing that people who came before me, my foremothers, mm-hmm. my forefathers, were able to laugh. Like, they were able to experience joy, mm-hmm. Even in like really intense and sorrowful moments. Mm-hmm. So I love Pepper LaBeija. And then I also love Octavia St. Laurent because she, like, I don't, I think that maybe, like, she started this really fierce bloodline in queer folks because the way she walked and the way that she talked, the way she owned her space was magical in my eyes. Like, I just thought that she was really, really, really powerful in the film. Mm-hmm. I also feel a lot of her gifts on my timeline. Mm-hmm. So I think those three people, and those few moments make the film for me, but their entire film is a beautiful story that just gives light to ballroom culture and exactly what that looked like in the 80s for Black, queer, and trans people who were femme, who were living with HIV, mm-hmm. and who were more marginalized in the world and in our own community. Mm-hmm. So I just love the film. I love the folks from it. And I know that played a pivotal role in coming into my own queerness mm-hmm. and in seeing like Black queer history. Mm-hmm. I remember sitting in my English class my freshman year with a professor by the name of Natasha Walker, who I love to this day. Like she has made such a huge impact on my life. And part of that class, like the requirement for that class was to sit and watch Paris is Burning.
Oh, wow.
And to write something on it. So we were watching this in this classroom and I'm in the room, like I go to Morehouse. So, you know, most of the guys there are like these really hyper-masculine, cishet men who were really not interested at all in seeing drag queens and trans women and femme guys on screen. Mm. And at the time, like I wasn't sure that I was prepared for that either, but watching that film, it helped me a lot. Between her and Dr. Daniel Black, who is also someone I talked about on the thread on Black Queer Story Month, between those two, I found a way to articulate my own queerness mm-hmm. Through their classes. And so Paris is Burning is like it holds like a special place in my heart mm-hmm. for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's definitely, Rebecca hasn't seen it, but I've seen it several times.
Oh my God, you gotta watch it.
I know, so and I'm listening to you talk and I'm like, oh, I'm so ashamed of myself.
It's mad beautiful, and it's funny as fuck, but also like sometimes you will cry. There's mad quotables from it. I definitely would recommend it. Yeah, I would definitely recommend it to like budding Black queer folk. And then also mm-hmm. For like cisgender and straight Black people, like, this right. is the slang that you use now. You should probably learn where it comes from.
Yeah.
Right.
So, yeah.
Also, have y'all heard of the new, like, documentary that's like that called Kiki?
I have heard about that for, like, the past 2 years now, but I have not seen it yet.
I watched it. It's actually pretty good. Like, I really enjoyed it. It's kind of like Paris is Burning, mm-hmm. But, like, more modern. So, mm-hmm. like, you hear a lot more terminology that we use mm-hmm. now, especially in academic spaces. But it's really good, so mm-hmm. y'all should watch it if you get a chance.
Definitely will.
Yeah.
I got books to read, documentaries to watch. I'm getting educated today. I love it.
And then finally, we didn't send you this last talking point, but we have a couple of time. We have some time left in the studio. Yeah. If you could talk about Marsha P. Johnson and the Black queer influence of the Stonewall Rebellion and the Stonewall Riots. So I guess maybe start with what is Stonewall for the you're not sure who listens to the show, so we kind of just have to do like the cursory. What are we talking about in the first place?
Right.
Were the Stonewall Riots, and then kind of go into the Black influence and the Black people who were kind of behind that.
Stonewall was a club in the 60s in, I believe, Manhattan, New York.
Yeah, it's like by Christopher Street.
So it was, look at you. Like, y'all.
I mean, we live here.
Oh, that's true. So Stonewall was a club that Marsha P. Johnson and Sylvia were just in there, like, trying to enjoy their little drink. And police, like they do, came in acting up. White folks, like they do, came in acting up. and so, like, it kind of birthed, like, this this movement that was unexpected. That I imagine, like, when I think of Marsha P. Johnson, I think about a lot of modern-day activists or organizers who literally were probably sitting at their homes just trying to mind our business, and something popped off, and we had to spring into action because no one else would. So, anyway, so they were like, when the story gets told, they usually get told it's like it was just one big moment and then nothing else happened. But the Stonewall Riots were really a series of events that happened like across time, across days, across weeks, of like disruptions from folks in the community and folks in the LGBTQ community. But of the first to ever throw a bottle or a stone at the building or in the bar was Marsha P. Johnson, who was a trans woman turned activist, and was also, I believe, a sex worker. And I think that's really important to name.
Definitely.
Because a lot of folks don't respect sex workers, but I've been in that line of work, so like I absolutely think that's important to name. So anyway, Marsha P. Johnson was a trans woman and a sex worker who threw like the first bottle at Stonewall. And so from there, like there was this long, these long moments of unrest in Manhattan and in New York in general. And she made a lot of room. She made a lot of space for a lot of the early civil rights movement to like to even happen, especially up north. Like a lot of civil rights stuff happened down south in Alabama and Atlanta and stuff like that. But Marsha P. Johnson's actions made a lot of space for civil rights movement, for the movement to like have more of an impact up north. And so through that, like she became this activist and kind of got like propelled into a different space that she wasn't really prepared for, that she wasn't really, well, I don't want to say she wasn't prepared for, but that I'll say that she wasn't really thinking about. She went from just having to survive to like carrying an entire body of people on her back. And in doing so, like a lot of the cis white gays, we don't like them. they would oftentimes exclude her from spaces. Like this woman who even got conversations started about LGBT inclusivity in a mainstream way was oftentimes excluded from our spaces. And so I remember watching a video that I had never seen before. I don't know if y'all seen it or not, but like it's in black and white. And she's standing, I don't remember where she was standing at, but she was standing in front of a crowd of people. And she like snatched the mic and started fussing at the folks on in front of her, like talking about trans inclusivity and like welcoming her into their spaces and why they should be welcoming her into their spaces. And I thought that was really powerful to see that from her. But I also like got really upset because this was in the 60s. This was over 50 years ago, and we're like, trans women are still having to do that. Like,
yeah, still snatching mics.
Still having to like to force themselves into spaces that they should have direct access to. And so like it reminded me like, I mean, this is really cool. Like this is our foremother, but like also these folks really out here still doing that?
Could have happened yesterday.
Did it really?
No, no, no. I said it could have happened yesterday.
Oh, yeah. It could have happened yesterday. Yeah. It probably did happen
yesterday. It probably did.
Yeah, like, it's just, it sucks, and it bothers me a lot because I just, even outside of her labor, outside of the work that she did, and outside of the work that trans women do for all of us today, it's just like, community means something to me, and community has always meant something to African people. Mm-hmm. Across the diaspora, like, we've always been a very communal people. Mm-hmm. And so to watch as people, even of our own community, refuse to acknowledge us or to accept us, and to, like, allow space for fellowship to happen, mm-hmm. Is disheartening at best.
Yeah.
Like, it leaves a bit of a hole in my heart for folks like that, because I know that for me, like, my chosen family, and by chosen family I mean, like, friends who became family through my own personal hardships and battles and mm-hmm. stuff like that, mm-hmm. That are also queer and or trans, mm-hmm. Like, finding community in them has been a saving grace literally for my life. So, like, knowing all that she was dealing with back then in the 60s, and not being, like, accepted in her in our spaces, or what should be our spaces, especially after all the work that she had done, mm-hmm. Just annoys the hell out of me. But so that's, like, a brief synopsis of who she is, who she was, and who what the Stonewall Riots were. Mm-hmm. And so now there's, like, an institute named after her in Atlanta or in New York. Mm-hmm. And one of my good friends, y'all may have heard of her, Jamal Fatfim.
Yes. Jamal was on the show.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Last season.
That's lit. I love that.
Yeah.
I love Jamal.
Me too.
yeah, like, I was just talking to her the other day, actually, and so that's really cool. Anyway, I think about, like, the work that Jamal has done down at Morehouse, down in Atlanta, and just, like, around the country in general with No Fats, No Femmes, and through the Marsha B. Johnson Institute, and just, like, what that means for Jamal, and what I'm sure that would mean for Marsha if she were alive today, like, to see Jamal living, and not just Jamal, but I'm using Jamal as, like, a reference, because mm-hmm. we also know Jamal, but, like, just trans women and trans femmes, or gender deviant people in general, being able to do, like, to do that work in her name, I'm sure mm-hmm. has to feel amazing. Mm-hmm. So I just think about that a lot, and I guess if nothing else, I'm really glad that, like, we are a resilient people.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Quick shout out to Pay It No Mind, The Life and Times of Marsha P. Johnson, which is a documentary I saw 2 years ago, which is not the same documentary as that weird one where that white guy took, I think it was Raina Gossett's research and didn't, who is a trans feminine
that
person.
Was terrible.
Oh, yeah. And then didn't give any type of credit. Right?
Yeah. Not that documentary, but this is just a free documentary that you can find on YouTube with, like, 94,000 views. It's like 55 minutes long, and I watched it and, like, loved, I just fell in love with Marsha P. Johnson. Like, she was really beautiful, and she was really a light. And
she,
like,
laughed a lot.
And just, like, gave people flowers on the street for no reason.
That's
just
beautiful.
Like, cared fucking about people.
In
addition to being a fighter, but also, like, in addition to having, like, a fucking hard life because of this fucking systems of, like, racism, patriarchy, and trans misogyny. But yeah, I would definitely say check out that documentry. After this episode, watch Mad documentaries.
Seriously, guys.
Right, me too.
I have to do it too.
Read Mad books. Listen to The Fat Femme, the episode where we had Jamal on.
Yes. Now I gotta find that.
I will send you the link after we get off. Yeah, so we are going to wrap it up, but thank you so much for sharing
everything. That was
beautiful. Yeah.
Thank y'all. This was dope. I love this.
And before you go, just let our listeners know where they can find you, your website, your handles, anything like that.
So on Twitter, you can find me at _IamRoyal. And then on Facebook and Instagram, both, you can find me at TheGodlySean. That's DaGodlySHaun. Mm-hmm. And then you can find my website with all of my work and services that I offer and stuff like that at DaShawnHarrison.com.
All right. Dope. Thank you so much.
Thanks, y'all.
So that was really dope.
That was awesome. No, I just love when I hear guests' personal stories and I'm just sitting there like, oh, yeah. So relatable. So just like hearing people talk, I just love sitting here and I love it. Mm-hmm. Honestly,
you like to use it in debates later and arguments.
That is implied but also very true. I'm gonna be like, well, you know, nah,
I spoke to Deshaun the other day
and this is all the things I know. Exactly. Shut the fuck up. Yeah. Yep.
But that is why I started. I never like fully read Boy Wives and Sister Husbands, but that's why I started perusing through it in the first place. Okay. 'Cause I wanted to be like, hey, these are all the examples of fucking same sex couplings going on in Africa. So shut the fuck up. Because I was really mad at Hoteps at a point in my life, too.
They get your blood boiling, but you
I was
know.
Thinking it would be kind of cool to just have one of the writers on.
Now that'd be cool.
People write one of these books on just to like really dissect everything. That would be cool. Patreon content.
Just saying.
Yeah.
Because you don't deserve that. If you want to know, read the book. But if you want to listen to it, fucking subscribe on Patreon.
That's it. That would just be a cool episode in general. So before we end this show and thus end this Black History Month, man, gotta have a better title for that next
we
year.
We do.
Because that is
the Black
shitty.
Black History. Guys, I have a list that comes out randomly. But anyway, Black History Month. Is now over.
Yeah.
Let us know what you thought of it, first of all. But to end it off.
Yes. We're going to play an excerpt of a Black History Month poem by our very own Rob the God. Yes, Rob the God of Kwanzaa. And the poem is called "The Revolution Will Not Be Streamed Online." Take a listen.
You may be able to hear it down the block. Gunshots will no longer sound like firecrackers. Firecrackers will no longer sound like gunshots. Because we would be too busy banding together to fight each other, tell one another, put away your phone, brother, because the revolution will not be streamed online. The revolution will fill Sixth Avenue by day and Broadway by night. We will be marching not only for our freedom, but for our lives. We will be photographing these moments, but it will only feel real if you are near enough to hear the chants. Stop and gather paraphernalia because the revolution will not be streamed online. The revolution will not be streamed online. The revolution will not be brought to you by YouTube in an 8-part series beginning with 30 seconds of optionally mandatory commercials of things you can and can't afford. The revolution will not show you the tweets of the First Lady calling for an end to police violating the free. The POTUS will never post these. He's now realizing that real lies in our Black youth's eyes because the revolution will not be streamed online. The revolution won't be waiting for you on your Facebook invites, screenshotted instantly to your Instagram feed. The revolution may not be tweeted by civil rights activists of our timeline as social media has taken precedence over socializing. The revolution is trying to find its way back to you. But even if you hear about it, even if you hear about the revolution online to buy your iPhone 75, you will have to meet at that secret location to know that the revolution will not be streamed online. There will be no title for all. There will be no rappers telling us to be better as if they are better than us. You won't see Iggy Azalea carrying a picket sign while Katy Perry chants that Black Lives Matter too. Miley and Justin will not join Robin Thicke in an act of defiance because this revolution isn't for them, it's for you. This revolution isn't for them, it's for you. The revolution will not shape your waist. The revolution will not lighten your face. The revolution will not make you jump higher or look flyer. The revolution is not made from 120 strands of Egyptian cotton. It is not 90 calories or less. It will not make the curls on your head grow 10 times thicker or faster because the revolution will not be streamed online. There will be no selfies of you and Rachel Dolezal stealing beer during a Baltimore riot screaming, "I am an American." Or protesting the win-loss draw of your home baseball team by torturing entire towns. UPN9 won't come back for you. Wireless subscriptions are worth monopoly money because the revolution will not be streamed online. There will be no video of cops shooting down brothers on instant replay. There would be no videos of cops shooting down brothers on instant replay. There would be no pictures of the token child greeting cops as their city rots behind them. Stills of looting. There would be no stills of looting without stills of peace. There would be no video of Donald Trump passing Harvey, Irma, Maria victims again and again as he remembers Katrina catastrophic event, allowing a former press to get himself into some things he shouldn't have gotten into anyway. Will they talk of our revolution on The Breakfast Club? Will they talk of our revolution on Worldstar? Will they leave our revolution to be molded by all mass media, the corporate community, and the upper class own? Or will they leave a deaf tone on our earphones because they are a part of our revolution too? Obama will watch live and not join, but the revolution will be joined and not watched live. Who will survive in America? The revolution will not be streamed online, streamed online, streamed online. Brothers and sisters, remember, every time it comes, the revolution will always be live.
So I hope you guys enjoyed that dope-ass poem by Rob.
We know you did.
Yeah.
You don't have to tell us.
If you want to see a video of Rob performing that poem, you can fucking subscribe on Patreon, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But yes, in the meantime, you can also follow us on social media.
Well, if you are going to follow us on social media, you can do so by following Inner Ho Uprising without the G on Twitter and Inner Ho Uprising on Instagram and Facebook. And you can also go on innerhouprising.com to pay a bitch or check out our merchandise.
Mm-hmm. Say it. I know I always say mine last. Do it.
I always look at you like maybe. Anyway,
never.
Sam's the most important person, and she is. So,
and you will know that every time.
Well, me, the lesser important person, and obviously a vehicle to Sam's success.
Stay in your place, bitch. Stay in
your place. You can follow me on Instagram and Twitter at Rebby or Not. God, it's like everyone lives to hate me. It's Rebby or Not, guys. Anyway,
you should be a vehicle to Sam's success. That was the funniest thing I've ever heard in my entire life. Do those exist? What success?
Well, eventually.
Hopefully.
You'll think of the person you stepped on along the way. It'll be me under your shoe. With a sad face.
You can follow me, the success, as opposed to the vehicle to such, yes, at SlamRid on Instagram and Twitter. And fuck Snapchat, bitch.
No, damn.
Rate us 5 stars on iTunes and Stitcher, and see you next week.
Thanks for tuning in.